Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing.
And Bubba Wallace.
You know what's the worst part of a race? A rain delay.
Sitting around, waiting for the track to dry, is dull.
But instead of waiting, we hang out with Chumba Casino.
Social casino slots, bingo, solitaire, plenty of fun to keep us entertained.
So why let a rain delay slow you down? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
He always seems to get involved, doesn't he?
I'm telling you, too many coconuts have hit him right on top of the skull.
Well, I think Anthony will be a great acquisition. He can do it all.
Avery, who show is this?
And we're live. Welcome, everybody, here to the Lakers Lounge Podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin, senior Lakers insider for Offside, as well as their lead Lakers content creator. All of these titles. Join on this fine, extra fine, I would say, Monday night by Raj Chapalu. Raj, this is going to be one of those games that we like. This is going to be like the Nick Smith Jr. game, right? Like later in the year, the Lakers will be, unless you're saying that, or unless you think that there are going to be more games like this for Nick Smith Jr., but like this is going to be one of those games that you get to the end of the year and you're tallying up where the Lakers currently sit and you're like, man, it's a good thing they have this many wins, or it's a good thing they only have this many losses. And you're going to look back on it, you're like, man, there was that one game where they're on the second night of a back-to-back, no LeBron, no Luka, no Austin, felt like no hope. But nope, they got Nick Smith Jr. and the Lakers were able to carry out a win. Are you currently touching the floor right now?
Now that was extremely exciting. It was cool to watch Nick Smith cook. It's weird because Portland is running this, we'll get into it, but this junky defense, right, where it's just ball pressure upon ball pressure upon ball pressure, picking up 94 feet every single play. And it strangely works into the hands of a few different guys. Not every guy, but Nick Smith Jr. went, oh, you're handing me the keys? Like, I get to just drive and no one can tell me anything. I don't have to worry about crashing any cars. Like, I get to just score whenever I want. And he got into a rhythm that's very difficult to turn off. And you saw all the offensive talent, all the stuff that I think drew the Lakers into giving him a two-way instantly when he came on the market. And Bronny James, who, you know, I've been trying to tell all summer, like, hey, this is a guy that was playing very well in the G League, rose up to being one of the best guards on the team. There's a real talent there that it was tough to show in different environments. But this is the best winning basketball he's played in a long time. This is just like, I've been around enough now to see good teams, Anthony, and know how they operate and know how they work, right? And, you know, being in the building, you get a better sense of the vibe as well, the camaraderie. All players talk about how miserable being on a losing team is. You don't have to go far to find quotes about that. Go around the league now to find quotes about what it's like being on losing teams. Yeah, Ja doesn't hide his emotions very well. But you could tell this team not only is good, not only is deep, in my opinion, but they know they're good. You know what I mean? And they are starting to believe in everything. And those cuts just go a little harder. The rebounding, you give a little bit more effort to. This is exciting. 6-2. Luka's missed games. Obviously, Luka and Austin both missed tonight. I'd argue they'd be 7-1 if Marcus Smart played 5 days ago against Portland, this same Portland team that Austin dropped 40 and whatever on while playing with one ball handler. This is a super exciting team. DeAndre Ayton, what a game. Comeback revenge game for him. No, this is extremely, extremely exciting. And we have, you know, however much X dollars of players sitting on the bench tonight watching this this incredible performance.
Well, not just the amount of salary that was sitting watching this game that is eventually going to come back and play for the Lakers, but also the amount of expiring salary that is sitting there watching the Lakers play this game.
No,
and I'm thinking, no. Like, ooh, Nick Smith Jr. means it makes it really easy to trade Gabe Vincent, you know?
Oh, like, no, we're not. Not tonight. Not tonight. That's for DeAndre February.
Ayton, he does, and J.J. Redick wanting to go as often as he does makes it super easy to trade Maxi Kleba. Just, you know, pointing out a couple of things that I was thinking. Robert Williams looked really good in this game as well.
Yeah, of course he came back tonight. Robert Williams just had to come back tonight.
Immediately. He's a game, by the way. Like, they subbed out Klingon, brought in Williams, and it was like, oh shit, athleticism.
Whoa. Guy that can jump 5 feet, yeah.
Klingon's like struggling to put his shoes on and get him off of the floor. And Robert Williams come in, and Aiden's like, oh shit, where'd he go? Like, what happened? But there's so much to talk about. Like, really, like a one of those rare wins that, like, usually, Raj, over the times that, like, you and I have been doing these shows, far more often than not, unfortunately, it's like, I can't wait to hop on and do a show because I'm just really fired up about how annoyed I am talking about this stupid team sometimes. But this was one of those games that I was like, end already. I got to get going. And it's like, I recorded my commuter take for Offside on my way here, and it's like, recorded already, get it sent off, let's go. I gotta talk about this game because there's so much to hit on. There's the on, you know, we talked about the DeAndre Ayton aspect of it, we talked about Nick Smith Jr. playing the way that he did. I loved the game that I saw from Jake LaRavia tonight. Loved it. He shot like shit. I don't even care. I want to talk about that. I want to talk about Bronny, who I think is kind of slowly and surely understanding what role he's going to have to play if he's going to stick in the NBA. He's not going to be an off-the-dribble scorer. He's not going to be a primary creator. He's going to be an Avery Bradley-type point guard who goes out there and works his ass off defensively and makes enough plays offensively to be able to stick. So I think that's been really interesting to watch. And more than anything, Raj, like, I talked about how important these next few games are because I really kind of want the Lakers to sit at like 7-3, 8-2, 10 games in, if possible, given how easy this early slate has been and how difficult things are going to get later in the year. And this game really allows them to do that, right? You beat Portland in this spot. And it allows you to, you know, maybe even drop a game and still sit at 7-3, 10 games in, despite not having Luka for a handful of those games, not having LeBron for any of those games. Marcus Smart has been in and out of the lineup. Like, it's just this was a really important win on a variety of levels, and I can't wait to dive fully into it. Quick reminder, everybody, please hit that subscribe button. Please hit that like button if you guys are watching live. If you're on Twitter, head on over to youtube.com/@LakersLounge to find the show there. And then if you guys are listening to the show in the morning via podcast, please hit that subscribe button wherever it is that you get your podcast, preferably on Odyssey, because I am a company man. All right. So where do you want to start, Raj? I'm gonna hand the wheel over to you.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I just wanted, one thing you mentioned was this was technically an easy start, and I argue it's wasn't really. I mean, if you look at just the guys that have been out and the road games that they've already won, you had the Austin game winner, obviously Minnesota started with the Warriors. And I think this team has really coalesced and found something, but I don't think you can talk about this game without starting with Nick Smith Jr. just going on an absolute heater. And the Lakers have had trouble getting contributions from their two ways, right? Like, I mean, Jordan Goodwin obviously had a great time last year and he was the one, but their big men have kind of not gotten to the point that they want to do. Jemison and Koloko haven't really reached a rotation level, but this is what they're there for, right? This is the point of having talent at the end of your bench you can go to. I throw Dalton into this as well. I think Dalton's found something confidence wise, especially like the way I kind of monitored Dalton is he takes a lot of threes in terms that are super contested when he's not feeling well, when he's not in a rhythm, but he's been getting a bunch of mid-range kind of pull-ups. They're running stuff for him. You could tell the game has slowed down for him, but no, Nick Smith, just a guy that comes in and is a bucket. Like, that's something that's super valuable to have at the end of your bench. And again, Portland, I thought with their super ball pressure really played into his strengths as a ball handler. And that pull-up jump shot, I mean, you know how difficult of a shot that is when you're coming off a guy's chasing behind you, and the guy behind you is like Drew Holiday, Tamari Kamara, right? These aren't just normal defenders. Yeah. Portland puts out some of the best in the league, and he's coming off like, oh, and there's no, like, every hooper knows this, there's no better feeling in the world that exists when you know you're hot and the rim looks like an ocean. Like, the amount of jealousy I've had for that feeling is just, that is the most amazing feeling in the world. And to have that on an NBA floor, because you could see it, right? All that ball pressure did not matter after a while. After the first few threes he hit and the floaters went down, you could tell, like, he was back in his environment. You know, he was so comfortable. That was cool to watch for him, and he just went off. I don't know. I don't have his final line in front of me, but I think it was like 20-something points that he ended up with, a huge third quarter to kind of put Portland at bay. What a game. What a career, maybe defining game for him, could kind of lead to other deals.
Extending, maybe.
Yeah.
Harrison is watching and dropped a super comment. So I got to figure out, like, the payment structure of this and like that's actually going to play out. But it does mean we get to play this first. Fuck Washington! And Harrison's question is, do you think Luka and Austin come off of the bench when they come back to make room for Nick Smith Jr.? Look, all I'm saying is I think this does make it really easy to move Gabe. Like, if Nick Smith is anything close to this, because I am so sick of waiting for Gabe to, like, be good and stay healthy for a prolonged period of time. Like, it's just, I'm done. He makes too much money. He's not good enough to make the amount of money that he's making. He's not good enough, even when he plays, to be like, he looked incredible in the preseason. It's like, I was just waiting for the regression game. And then eventually it was like the regression came in the form of him getting hurt. I'm sick of it. I want off of the Gabe Vincent ride. So it's like, all right, turn Gabe Vincent and Maxey and whoever into your fifth starter, convert Nick Smith Jr. into a full-time, NBA contract, and have him be like your third guard or whatever, or third or fourth guard, or like he's like 3A and Bronny is 3B. I just think like the path forward here at that position in that role, I just think Gabe Vincent is, especially like at a time where Dallas is so desperate for guard play, turn Gabe in a pick or a pick swap into Max Christie and get it over with. Just like get make this roster make more sense. Allow Nico to make another stupid decision and move on.
Yeah, I love that you went to old reliable. Just, hey, Nico, we need, you know, our next need is a 3. Dummy.
Like, it was so funny. I was laughing at this over the course of the day. I actually, like, you know, presented the question in the lounge Slack, and I was thinking, would you trade Austin Reaves for Ja Morant straight up? And like, overwhelmingly over the course of the day, nobody would trade Austin Reaves for not just Lakers people, but like, nobody would trade Austin Reaves for Ja Morant. And I was looking at like some of the quotes after tonight's game, where he's talking about the organization the way that he did and before he got suspended. So clearly he didn't learn his lesson. So it's like, I don't know. Ja to me is very clearly not worth the headache that comes with him. I just think he just doesn't get it as a professional, not basketball player, but just as a professional. And I was thinking about, like, man, even if they do trade him, where would they even trade him? And the nice thing about like this modern or this iteration of the league right now is you have the Joe Dumars, New Orleans Pelicans. They're always capable of doing something really stupid. You have the Sacramento Kings, who might be run by Vivek Ranadive's daughter. They are always capable of doing really dumb things. Or Jeremy Lamb. Also weirdly involved there as well. So you have like plenty of dumb organizations in the sport right now. The Dallas Mavericks traded Luka Doncic. So like there are plenty of dumb organizations in the sport right now, to where like teams, I think, are going to start picking on those organizations, and you're going to have some really, really important and critical moves. And it's why I think the Lakers are really well positioned to take advantage of those dumb teams at some point later in the year. And one thing that I'm thinking about doing is sending Gabe to Dallas and try to get Max Christie back with, you know, with whatever draft compensation it takes to bring him back. We already saw the Lakers benefit from the Sacramento Kings being stupid by being able to, and the Brooklyn Nets by being stupid and letting Jake LaRavia walk. We've already seen the Charlotte Hornets be so stupid to waive Nick Smith Jr. Heading into the season. The Lakers are benefiting from that. Like, I love that there are so many dumb teams out there that, like, are, that's the thing. People are, like, complaining about the Dodgers ruining the sport. No, man, there's just a lot of dumb, cheap owners out there and dumb, cheap baseball teams that they let Max Muncy walk and they let, like, Blake Treinen walk and they let all of these. Kike Hernandez was a throw-in at the back end of a trade, and he's turned out to be Mr. October for the Dodgers. Like, if you're a well-run organization and you've invested into the development of the guys that you actually bring in to your organization, that allows you to take advantage of the really dumb teams out there. And for me, it's like the Lakers have the assets to take advantage of those dumb teams. And Nick Smith Jr., I think, presents them this really cool opportunity to be able to do so even further, because I'm sick of waiting for Gabe Vincent to get and stay healthy and get and remain a good NBA player.
Yeah, I wouldn't say dumb, but I would say franchises without a real, no direction.
I'm whose sources matter. I'm saying those teams are stupid. Like, those teams are just not smart. Like, here's the thing. When you let a Jake LaRavia walk for nothing whatsoever, and you develop a reputation at one point in the offseason, Raj, the Sacramento Kings were trying to find a way to just give away Malik Monk.
I have no idea what they're doing. Like, I would love to see their whiteboard in the room just to understand, like,
it
what's going
Bade.
On.
It says Bade. It hasn't been erased. Like,
it has to, because it makes no sense. Like, I have no idea what they're doing. The Pelicans, I think, are on the other side of this, where they're building around a player that, again, hasn't been healthy or been around their franchise. I just want to go to Gabe really quick, because I do feel for him. Like, I think that's a guy that did want to come back, and I think the preseason at least showed when he's right, there's a player that's very productive and helpful, has a level of consistency you can get from him, that level of ball handling, just maturity as an offensive player in terms of experience. And I think he does the right things defensively, even if his size is limiting in terms of what he can do in terms of physical tools. But what I think the absence of Gabe has shown is just how freaking good Marcus Smart is. And Marcus Smart looks amazing. I do want to get to LaRavia as well, because I'm with you. I love his play. But again, Lakers, I feel like I've hit on all their free agents, which I don't remember the last time that's happened. Great offseason, every single, all three have been successes in terms of Ayton, Smart, and LaRavia. But Marcus Smart looks like the Boston player, and his, like, he dribbles where it's such a experience in terms of you don't know where it's going all the time, but he's a guy that has a lot of, like, there's a level of ego to him where it's like, oh, you're gonna ball pressure me? Like, I'm Marcus Smart. Like, I've started on a team that's gone to the finals. I've been the lead
and then he
guard
kicks the ball and he runs into a couple people and he shoots a layup.
But there's a level of, like, 100 miles per hour motor that he brings that allows for a team to win games like this. You know what I mean? There's a level of, I don't care how many guys are out. Like, you can't, like, Danny Agba, you don't get to elbow me in the post. I don't care who you think you're playing. But, like, there's a level of just competitive spirit that he brings nightly that, again, just really comes off in person. And then on the road, I think it travels, that is so helpful. And, again, he had a lot of drives, again, that don't go anywhere but do kind of create attention in the paint. I don't know. I've loved the Marcus Smart experience so far. Someone on Twitter told me don't call it an experience. And I was like, it's an experience. He's a player on the Lakers team. But
we are experiencing
his play. But in any case, Smart has been really fun. And I think, again, just brings a level of talent to the guard position that I was a little bit worried in terms of what his health would be. But Anthony, Marcus Smart looks like the guy that, you know, was winning DPOIs. And, you know, obviously he won't get that here, I don't think, in terms of how his minutes will go. But I've enjoyed him a lot. And again, tonight he didn't shoot well, but just his ball handling and his defensive intensity, and him and LaRavia both, I think it's contagious where he's got everybody diving on the floor now. Like, he does it. And now, LaRavia made the huge one where Bronny got the assist to Vando. I've enjoyed, you know, watching this team so much, and even shorthanded tonight, I thought this was a culture win where you get to, JJ gets to put this on the board whenever he wants and goes, like, when we play this way, when we play this hard, when we rebound, we can win, you know, anywhere. And Portland's a good team to me. They came in winning 3 in a row. They're 5-2, I believe, also on the season. That's a really good basketball team.
Or they were 4-2. Lakers 4-2. Were 5-2.
Gotcha. But Jrue Holiday, like, that's a good, like, solid team that they've got kind of constructed, and Lakers were able to get the win.
Yeah, I want to come back to the culture thing later in the show, because that's a good topic to kind of end on. I want to talk about Marcus Smart, and it was funny because, like, I'm not gonna lie, I was ready to start recording this episode at halftime of today's game. Like, I came into the game thinking that, like, you and I would be able to record at halftime, because, like, look, they just didn't have the offensive engines, you know. And I thought early, it wasn't even that the press was getting to them early. I just thought they didn't know what to run. You know, like, they've been really, the Lakers have been super reliant on pick and roll so far this season. And then at the beginning of this game, they weren't really running any of the pick and roll that they had run. And I know you don't have the personnel to do it, but I would still have rathered run that pick and roll so that you can create any kind of an advantage, or just appear to be running something, you know, have some direction offensively. And eventually I thought they got back to it in the half court, but because they didn't have those offensive engines, I was thinking to myself, like, what could we possibly hope for here? Let's go ahead and knock out this episode after halftime and I can go to bed at a decent hour. But no, like you're saying, I thought Marcus Smart set a real tone with his level of compete and his level of fire and his level of give a bleep, that, like, you know, this is always the case. Teams take on, if not the personality of, or they always take on the personality or approach of their best player available. And I thought tonight, you know, Marcus Smart may not have been their best overall player available, but he has kind of the most gravitas, right? Like, he has the most kind of cachet to him within a locker room of the guys who are actually available to play in this game. And I thought everybody basically adopted his kind of basketball worldview, where it was like, yeah, it's going to be frenetic, it's going to be up and down, it's going to be chaotic and at times ugly, but also we're going to be some mother bleepers to play against and try to compete against. And I thought eventually, I thought they wore Portland down. Like, I thought Portland at the beginning of the game, they were pressing a ton and they were up on their toes and stuff like that. And they kept throwing these haymakers at the Lakers, and the Lakers just took those punches, rolled away from them, threw a couple punches of their own. And by the time you got to, like, midway through the third quarter, I saw some slumped shoulders on that Portland team at home against the Lakers, a team that entire city hates with a burning passion. It was awesome to watch.
It's funny because that type of defense is difficult to play for 48 minutes. It just is. There's a reason every team does, like, every coach would love to ball pressure every possession, right? And be able to contain it and be able to contain ball pressure in that way. But that's a really tough thing, especially when it's not being successful. Like, it's really fun when you're getting steals, and they got a bunch of them. They forced a bunch of turnovers. But you're right, I thought down the stretch it was tougher to do. And again, like, I give so much credit. We talked about both of them, but Nick Smith and Bronny James just being able to bring the ball up. Like, that was a success, really. Ayton and Jackson Hayes and Vando all did their best to do some of that. Hayes turned his ankle a little bit. We'll see, you know, how he reacts to that. But I thought just all the guards that played, Dalton as well, being able to bring the ball up. And then it just allowed Nick Smith to get rolling. But you're right, Portland was able to really pressure us in the first quarter, second quarter, and they continue to build real leads. Like, they went up 9 and I believe double digits once in this game, but they were kind of having the Lakers at bay before, you know. And we didn't even get to Rui, who had 18 in the first half. I think Rui's had a very underrated start to this season. Like, it's very easy for him to kind of fall below the wayside of the conversation because he's been here for so long and there's a lot of shiny new toys on the team, where it's very easy to kind of lose
fit. Like, there's some question about the fit and whether that identity of just being offensively inclined can sure, you know, carry the Lakers through here.
No doubt.
He's the guy that would have to be subbed out.
Of course, but he's hit some huge shots, like in Minnesota, the big three, in Memphis tonight when Portland was clawing back. Those little fadeaway mid-range jumpers. Again, the release valve is a term that we, you know, that they use a lot. Him and Ayton just being a guy that you can just give the ball to and let them run. But anyway, it's a team win. Marcus Smart, Laravia, my God, what a find, what a cutter, off-ball mover. I called him a connect. I thought he was, you know, I was high on him as a connecting piece over the summer. And he's kind of surpassed even like my offensive expectations of him. He moves way better than you would think. He doesn't move fast, but he understands like counters extremely well. Like he understands, he gets a lot of cuts where he's coming up to screen, but he just reads that his guy is cheating it. So he back cuts it and just gets a dunk or a layup. And he talked after the game last night where he said, no more layups at the rim. Team told him like, you're dunk. If you can dunk, dunk it. He said, I'm going to do that, which is a fun little story. But now this is a good team, man. I'm excited to continue watching it. But
let's keep talking about Laravia because, you know, he had made a lot of noise recently, you know, some scoring totals in the 20s. And, you know, obviously he was never going to average, you know, 20 points a night. Like there aren't enough mouths to feed for him to get there. Right. Eventually when everybody is healthy, unless the Lakers are getting ready to score 170 points a night, which it might be possible. Like these guys, like that, you know, when everybody's healthy, this offense is going to be pretty overwhelming, but yeah, I was, so I sent out a tweet, Raj, during the game. And I was like, Laravia is having his regression game. And people got super defensive because it's like, don't you dare go after one of the Tres Leches guys. Don't you dare. And I'm like, no, he's literally regressing from the outside. He was struggling to shoot the basketball tonight. That's literally all that I meant. And I said in a follow-up tweet, I was like, credit to him, because even while he was struggling to shoot, he was still active defensively. I'm going to look at his line really quick. He played 36 minutes tonight. He had 11 points, grabbed five rebounds, dished out six assists, had three steals, only the one turnover. Wound up shooting pretty well from the field overall, 5 of 10 from the field. Did not make a three in this one. And I thought like it was really cool to watch him for a few reasons. One, again, the activity level never dipped. I thought he was out there, you know, really competing on or off of the ball, offensively or defensively. I thought that was really cool to watch. But then also, one of the things that drives me crazy in this modern iteration of the sport is how if a team or a player doesn't quite have it going from three-point range, they just keep firing away. And it's like there's no, like, rhythm gainers, you know, that trying to get to the free throw line just to see the ball go through the hoop. There's no trying to get to the rim just to get the ball going, you know, to create a different type of shot for yourself. There's no getting to the mid range to shoot something that you're maybe a little bit more comfortable or capable with. It is the Houston Rockets missing 27 straight three pointers in a playoff game and never adjusting. And that's how far too often I see a lot of these players in these teams approach the sport. And instead tonight, I watched Jake Laravia again maintain his level of compete and his level of activity, but also very importantly, getting to the pinch post, getting to the rim, getting to his floater game, just doing other things as an offensive weapon that like getting into his bag and allowing himself to get into a rhythm as a scorer, not a shooter, but as a scorer to help impact the game that way too. Raj, I think this guy's going to be fucking legit. Like I really believe in what Laravia could possibly be.
He's been awesome. And one thing that jumps out, first two games, he shot a combined 7 times, right? And I think he was trying to find his way in terms of where his shots come from. Someone got to him or he watched film or whichever it was, but he's kind of realized where he can get shots from. And I think I talked about last year, I think around 94% of his shots were kind of in the paint or at the outside three-point line. But he's found, like, he has a nice little mid-range fade that he can resort to when, you know, when he drives and he doesn't find a kick out or doesn't have the lob threat is covered. He has a nice little fadeaway that's gone in at a consistent rate. He attacks the rim hard. He finishes nicely with both hands, can get to the rim A good cutter, like I mentioned, understands where open, you know, kind of lanes are. 10 shots again tonight, you know, didn't make a three, as you mentioned. But you're right, these like players that don't need touches that are productive, right? I think that's what you're looking for. Like, this team has ball handling filled. Didn't show tonight, right? Tonight's not the vision for that. But you have LeBron James, Austin Reeves, and Luka Doncic on your bench. The ball's
creation is set.
The ball handling is checked, and Laravia and Vando and Smart, but we're focusing on Laravia, just fills the stat sheet. Like six assists tonight, 5 rebounds, 3 steals. He had 4 steals against Miami the night before. Guy that, like, something that stands out, Anthony, is his hands are never down, you know, like Dalton gets in trouble with this. And there was a point, I think he fouled Jeremy Grant, and Marcus Smart was kind of telling him, like, hey, you're not in defensive position. Like, you're not ready. Like, when they're catching and going, but Laravia, his hands are always up, and he's never kind of out of defensive position. He'll get beat off the dribble for sure, but anytime like a pass is going, he's always getting his hands, and that's how he gets a ton of deflections, and he causes a lot of turnovers. I've enjoyed watching him, and again, at
he's never completely stationary. Like, his hands are always moving, yes, and they're always active. You know, his palms are always up, and that's also valuable, but he's always, I know you're not much of a football guy, but I used this analogy the other night where it's like, really smart receivers or tight ends will do this thing. Travis Kelce does this with Patrick Mahomes a ton, where he just kind of floats into soft patches of the zone where he understands, all right, this is the type of defense that they're in. This is the type of coverage that they have. They have all of this other stuff covered. Well, they can't cover the whole field. So where's the soft spot in this zone? And Kelce is just so good at just kind of looking, like, you'll see him run some of his routes, and he doesn't run like a normal route like you would normally see some of these guys run. He's literally running around there, and he's looking around at the defense, and he just kind of like floats into a dangerous spot that defense does not want somebody. And Laravia is so good at this, where it's like, you know, whether a team is in man or in zone or whatever, he is just so good at placing himself in these dangerous pockets on the court, whether it's to get an offensive rebound or to catch a pass or to catch a pass that leads to the assist. You know, like, he's just so good at identifying where a defense does not want him, or where an opposing offense does not want him, so that he can deflect a crucial pass there too. And I know that there's some cliches that I'm going to throw out here, right? Real head for the game, you know, sneaky athleticism, all the white guy terms. Like, I'll just get him out of the way now. But I do think that he has a real understanding of, like, basketball geometry and basketball placement, that, you know, placement on a basketball court and real estate that is really critical to making himself more valuable, you know, when he doesn't get those touches or dribbles.
Yeah. Yeah, it reminds me a lot of, I remember when, you know, Austin took his leap, I thought no player kind of filled the role behind him, which was that connecting player, right? Austin took the leap as the on-ball guy. We didn't really have the connecting piece behind. Laravia reminds me a lot of, like, that's the kind of connecting piece we've been looking for. Second thing on him, it's funny. He's one of the first players that, like, the Lakers have had a lot of guys in recent years where they're actually shorter than they're listed. Right. It's like, yeah, he's listed at 6'2", but he's actually 6 foot. And yeah. Laravia is finally one of those guys that's listed at 6'7", but I wouldn't be shocked if he's
center last game.
Yeah. And like, he's a lot bigger than you think. And it's kind of nice having a player that's actually has more size than he's actually listed at. And he leverages that really well. And you talked about how his IQ transfers with him on both sides of the court. Just really, like you mentioned, a smart basketball player that, again, I just want to see this team like fully constructed, right? I've gotten bits and pieces, got to see it with Luka and Austin. I've seen it with Luka, seen it with Austin running the show. Once LeBron comes back, then we finally get the full puzzle. But like, all these pieces fit like so cleanly. It makes you really tempted to kind of to see it at its full form.
So I was told to hold on to this story in the offseason because I didn't want to overhype Laravia before seeing him play, but I can tell the story now. Laravia obviously shares an agent with Austin, right? And it's a very, Aaron reps he's on his way up in the agency game. But it means that the guys that do share Aaron as an agent, they all are very close, right? It's actually really cool to see how these guys, and this is pretty common, right, within similar agencies and stuff. But apparently they were as I was kind of told, apparently the Lakers were kind of working out in one of these practices before training camp. And Austin is the kind of guy who, like, if he likes you, he gives you shit, right?
Okay.
Like the way that he talks about Luka, Luka the other night goes for 40 something or whatever, and Austin like tells him, "Thank you for finally doing your job," he's that kind of a guy. So apparently there's this group text with those guys, and Laravia, I guess, was playing really well in practice. And Austin, I guess, was the person who was in this group text who's like, "Look, you guys know me. I will not hype up a guy on empty calories if it's that. Laravia is fucking killing it in these practices or in these fives and stuff like that." And again, like I'm always skeptical on some of this stuff, right? Because you just never quite know. I did kind of trust it coming from Austin because I just think he's incapable of bullshitting. Like he's genuine to almost a fault. But hearing that about Laravia, it kind of got my, like, it perked up my ears a little bit. And I was kind of curious how he would look in preseason. And I thought he didn't look comfortable in preseason and at the beginning of the season. And I thought it was really critical for him to have that one, the first really, really shorthanded game that the Lakers played in, where he had to have a green light. He had to shoot because nobody else could really shoot and nobody else could really score. And I thought that was his green light game. And apparently he talked to JJ Redick and he talked to Rob Pelinka and he talked to, and those guys all told him, "Be aggressive. We need you to be a scorer. We need you to be the basketball player that we know you are, that we paid you to be." And I've thought that game, that first game, I think, was it the Memphis game or was it the one before?
Yeah, I think it was in Memphis where he had like 27. Or it might have been Minnesota. I can check.
I think it was Minnesota. I think it was the game before.
Yes, in Minnesota, he had 27 on 10 for 11 shooting.
Yeah, and I thought that game was the one that kind of, unlocked them a little bit. And I just since then, and I thought, like, tonight, I'm as hyped watching this game tonight as I was the Minnesota game.
I agree because
finding a way to impact the game and help your team win when you don't have it going, that is such a rare character trait in basketball players or in athletes. It's like the baseball player who, like, can't quite hit the ball over the fence. So it's like, all right, you know what? I'm just going to get on base and I'm going to steal a couple of bases and I'm going to apply some pressure that way. Or I'm going to get out into the field and I'm going to make some solid defensive plays and I'm going to help my team this way, rather than, hanging your head like, "Damn it, I've hit two to the warning track. What the, it's just get out there and be a winning basketball player, be an athlete." And I thought tonight was a really, really cool Laravia game.
So I know I am, like, I understood every reference there now because I've watched more baseball in the last
year
than I ever thought I have. Dynasty is obviously bringing extra fans, right? And obviously if it's in LA, then I'm just naturally inclined to follow it. And it's been cool just to be a baseball fan every October because we just win, I guess. And that's just how this works. Everyone's stress texting me and I'm like, this is going to work out. Like, I've seen this movie once last year and it worked out.
One time. Growing up a Dodger fan, we were the opposite of that.
Okay. Yeah. I've had a completely different experience with that. I just feel like this team wins at every pace. But no, I'm with you. Laravia has been so good and he just fits, I think, this team perfectly. He was a guy that, again, I wrote about this in the summer, that he was hiding kind of in plain sight. Like, his numbers were like, whoa, this guy, like, obviously he was playing on some weird lineups. He was in Sacramento, as we mentioned earlier, and he was in Memphis, right, as well. They were a really weird Memphis team without, John and Jaren really that healthy. But you look at his numbers, you're like, this guy is kind of just waiting for the right to volume for the volume to kind of keep up with the efficiency to keep up with the volume. And it seems like it has so far.
Last guy in particular that I want to talk about before we get to like a macro culture take is Ayton. Because he's playing in Portland tonight. You know, it's an opportunity for a revenge game. There's all these jokes coming in. Is, you know, are we going to get dominating? Are we going to get this? And are we going to get that? And I thought he thoroughly outplayed that front court. Like,
yeah,
thoroughly. Every time the Lakers needed a bucket, he was you know, scoring one of those flip shots and stuff like that. He even actually threw a lob down tonight that he really got up for. It was of the kind of like nail in the coffin plays that was kind of cool to see. He was also super active on the glass, both offensively and defensively. He finishes tonight, played 31 minutes, scored 29 points, grabbed 6 boards, 4 of them offensive, couple assists, 3 block shots, 14 of 19 from the field at a 73, almost 74% clip for him there. Got to the free throw line, split his 2 free throws. I thought it was a really good Ayton game. And just kind of like we talked about with LaRavia, like one of the cool things watching this team play is I think they all kind of recognize how much they need each other and how like the kind of, like you said earlier, like the opportunity, I think everybody's kind of like starting to recognize, LeBron included, you know, everybody's kind of recognizing like, ooh, Luka looks like this. Austin looks like this. We don't even have LeBron back yet, you know, and it's like I think Ayton kind of falls in line with everybody has been hyping him up. He talked about how people were like picking on him before games to get him angry before some of these games.
Yeah,
he played this one angry, and that was fun to watch.
He did. We got an angry DeAndre Ayton. I think it was, I said this before, I thought it was really important, and these are all human beings, right? It's very easy to go to any bad team and go, why aren't you running back on defense, even though the team is 3-20, right? And
yeah,
you know,
losing sucks. Yeah,
and, right. And so, but like when you've established a winning culture, and it feels like you have a bunch of guys keeping each other accountable, that's part of the anger. Part of it, right, is getting DeAndre Ayton angry. I also think they're just kind of joking around as well. But there's a level of accountability where they're going, no, you are a big part of this team. Like the offense runs through whatever Ayton's screen action is, like whether it's with Luka, whether it's with Austin, it's going to be with LeBron coming back. And tonight, Ayton, it's just absurd, Anthony, to have a big that he touches it below the free throw line. And I know it's going, like that's going in at a super high rate. Now there's some physicality stuff that can bother him, but just a guy that he had to play tonight where they threw it to him in the post. I don't remember who he had on him, whether it was Jeremy Grant or their big Klingon. He just did a fadeaway turnaround jumper swish, and it was just like nothing. Ran back down the court. Like, that's just what he does. Just a super talented offensive big. But I kind of want to focus. I thought defensively, he's been just at as much as you could ask. Like, again, I think this all relates to them winning and kind of being engaged. And when you're on a good team, you're more inclined to do these type of things. But his rebounding, his kind of attention to detail, the rim protection that he provided. He had 5 fouls tonight. I thought like 3 of them were very touch foul stuff where Portland was kind of initiating all the contact, but that happens in this league. Him being able to, again, get in foul trouble, come back in the game and still impact it the way he did. What a fine, and at the value that we have him at to get him for basically free. Ayton's been awesome. Like 6-2, and I believe he's missed one game so far, missed a Miami game, but no, Ayton's been really great. And again, I just want to see it with all the guys. We've got few bits and pieces of it. Him and Austin got a crash course basically because Luka's been out in preseason and they've really built their chemistry. Luka and Ayton, I think, have started to really build their chemistry as well. But no, Ayton's been done everything that he asked, and just as a threat from the mid-range, being a 50% mid-range guy, like I think AD was a mid-range threat. It's just the numbers really tailed off, like,
yeah,
especially after the bubble. Ayton is a legit like 50% mid-range shooter, and that, like, he doesn't space to the three-point line, but just spacing even that far opens up so many things. He was again a release valve tonight. You mentioned 29 points, he had 10 rebounds. I don't remember the amount of blocks, but just been consistent every night, and that's all you can ask from him.
I don't know. I meant to say 20 and or 29 and 10. I don't know if I said 29 and 6, but he had 10 rebounds total, 6 of them defensive, 4 of them offensive.
Yeah.
And those look the way that Portland has found their success this year was by winning the possession game and winning the field goal attempt game. And I had, you know, when you can get offensive rebounds against a team like Portland, that's looking to turn you over, if you can get multiple attempts on possessions against a team that is reliant upon, like depends on winning that possession battle, that's how you wind up beating them in the long run. And I thought Ayton played a very key part in that. My last thing on Ayton too is you mentioned the toll that being in a losing situation can take.
Yeah.
But I also think there's an immense toll that comes with being told you are something. Whether you're being told something that you actually are in the moment, whether your reputation is earned or whatever. But I always go back, and one of the things that I talked about when the Lakers picked him up was how Phoenix told him, hey, be a winning basketball player, do the little things, set hard screens, care about defense, rebound, be physical, do all these things, and we will, we will take care of you if you do all of those things. And then he does all of those things, and Robert Sarver, right at the very end, just goes, psych. And like, if I'm Ayton, that would completely alter my view of this league. And, I kind of thought that, I don't know, I watched him do those small things at one point in his career. He knew how to do those things. And then ever since then, he's been in these losing situations. And I've always been kind of curious, like, what would it look like if he got to a winning situation and a team and a roster around him that truly believed in him? Because I don't think Portland ever really did. Like they traded for him, but it was because like the price was so low. And I think the Lakers, look, they signed him because it didn't cost them anything. So like, I'm not saying that the Lakers had some incredible foresight here, but I did think that like, if you get him into a situation where he's with Luka, who he shares an agent with, and he's with a guy like Austin, who kind of understands like what it's going to take to hype this guy up game in, game out, and you get him into a winning situation that really actually needs him to be good in order to live up to the expectations that they have of themselves. I was always really kind of curious what this would look like. And look, it might still be the honeymoon period on this, and maybe eventually we get a regression to the mean on Ayton. I'm just saying that, like, to this point, the mean here, I think, is somewhat skewed by the situations that he has been in basically since he helped get Phoenix to a championship, you know, really early in his career.
And let's be real, like, DeAndre Ayton's not a $8 million player because of talent. Right. Like, that's not the reason he's on this deal at all. Like, it's for a bunch of other reasons that we don't have to get into here. Talent wise, DeAndre Ayton is absurd. Like, you can put him up with the best centers in basketball in terms of just what he can do offensively and even defensively, as you mentioned, that he's done before. And he's playing, in my opinion, with the best backcourt in basketball. He's playing with maybe the best passer in basketball, with the other one on the bench yet to come and play with, to meet him yet on the basketball court. He's probably overqualified for the role that he's in. Like, basketball doesn't really work this way. You don't get to just put Bradley Beal on a team and go, okay, Bradley Beal, you're now my 3-and-D guy, but you're so overqualified for that role because of what you've done in the past. That's not really how basketball works. It's not a clean fit, but I think just in this circumstance, it's worked so well because Ayton is so, like, he's so skilled that he can kind of fit in different places. And he's being spoon-fed shots that, like, he would not get elsewhere. The attention is so much on the guards that he's getting freed up, like, short roll shots that he can dream of only. And he's going to eat on those 29 tonight. And none of it looked forced. None of it looked Ayton's forcing the issue or, trying to pad stats or anything like that. It was through the flow of the offense. And tonight, obviously, is not, you know, he didn't have the shot creators with him tonight. But I think just throughout this season, his shots have been easy. It's been through the, you know, flow of the offense. And he's just a super talented big. And the Lakers are fortunate to have him on the deal they do. And he looks like he's engaged, Anthony. That's a scary thing. Like, engaged DeAndre Ayton on both ends has, you know, has anchored a finals team. That's a real thing he has on his resume. We'll see if he can do that here.
Well, an engaged DeAndre Ayton that his teammates and his organization is legitimately invested in making sure he remains engaged. Sure. And again, these things matter, dude. Like, having belief in the things that you are building. I've been at places where it was like, you know, I was just like a buy low option coming off of Vox, you know, and it was like, yeah, you know, we'll see what your show can do. And then you arrive at a place like Odyssey here where it's like, the, you know, where these people are like, they had looked at the stats at the show. They had looked at what the show had done previously. They had looked at my projects previously. And they were like, you know what? Let's throw some support behind your vision here. And let's see what we can do about, you know, bringing in other Lakers shows that you could partner with, and let's build this thing out, and let's really believe in that kind of vision. And I'm looking at Ayton here, and that spark that I'm seeing from him is, you know, it's a really cool thing. You know, it actually kind of reminds me, Raj, of Dwight, the second time that Dwight was a Laker, where everybody had kind of given up on Dwight, and he was this vetman guy, and you know, he had already reached like the tip top of his profession, and he's at a spot where it's like fighting, scratching, clawing to remain in the NBA. And the Lakers give him this shot and they give him this role, and he thrives in that role. And he finally gets to feel the love of this like Lakers fan base, right? Because the first time he was a Laker, it's kind of a weird relationship there, and it certainly ended poorly. But now he finally, like, when Dwight got to come back to LA and helped win that championship, you kind of saw that like spark in his eye again for the sport. You know, that was actually really cool to see. And I thought the Lakers made a mistake by not bringing him back. And I think here with Ayton, you know, you kind of see the way that he talks about playing and the way that he talks about the success that he's having, whether he personally is, you know, like tonight he scores 29 points. He's talking tonight after tonight's game in the same way that he has talked about other games where he scores like half as many points or less than half as many points, a third as many points even. And all that he has seemed to care about is his team's success. And, you know, I think that's pretty endearing.
Yeah. And it's, again, I mean, it's sometimes like they list the ages of the players and somehow Luka only being 26 just always jumps out at me. But Ayton still's only 27, right? And so you mentioned Dwight, who was obviously past his 30s when he came back. But
it's not apples to apples, but no,
for sure. But Ayton, again, like that's what I mean by the talent still being, he's in the peak of his prime, at least should be, right? 27 is kind of where you hit your prime years. He's obviously got the big contract already, but this is kind of where the experience matches your physical like peak form, and so you're kind of in that perfect place where the game has slowed down but your body's in that peak position. That's the age he's at right now, and it looks like the Lakers are, you know, primed to have that for the season. But I'm with you, they all believe, and he's a very transparent player. Like that's what's really like cool. He's an awesome person to listen to him talk, because he'll tell you everything, right? He shows it all on his sleeve, kind of. That's a great person to have, and he's just very open and transparent. And when he's had a bad game, he's very clear and open about it. And when he's, you know, feeling good, he'll kind of express that as well. And I like that. And I think it really fits this group of guys.
Yep. We have a super comment here that kind of leads into the culture aspect of this conversation. So Justin Tindall writes, the bad vibes in training camp, like they didn't exist. Culture being built is impressive. Braun better toe the company line. This is a good team. I really believe that LeBron, now he wasn't there tonight, right? He didn't travel with the team, which is I don't think you would normally do when you're as far out from returning as LeBron is. Luka was there. Austin was there. Austin was hyped for Nick Smith Jr. He's a cool
picture whole team was, which was cool. Yeah, the whole team collecting him when he got to the bench was awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but like Bron tweeting about, you know, I think he sent out an Instagram post about the lob that Austin had to Bronny. He has tweeted about Austin's performances. He has tweeted about Luka. You know, he's just like, and he's a lot more active on the sidelines. Like, look, LeBron isn't, I don't think, the best poker player. I think he thinks he's a much better poker player than he actually is. And I think if you read between the lines here and you can kind of look at the actions that he's taking, you're seeing a guy who's kind of looking around at the situation and he's kind of like, All right, let's go. You know, and I think you're seeing that from LeBron. And I'm actually not very worried about him towing the company line. I do want to talk about like the culture thing. And look, I've seen the trolling comments here in the chat of like, man, just imagine what it would look like if they cared about preseason. I still maintain that like I you know, my nerves going into this season about like not caring to the extent that I wish they had in preseason games. But what I did say at the time, and Pete and I talked about this, was based on some of the things that we saw when more guys were available, I did think they were actually getting the most out of their practice time. And at least in terms of like implementing the system and working on these kind of cultural things, the conditioning, I don't think, was quite where it needed to be. And I think that's why you've seen some of these soft tissue injuries that they've picked up. But like at the end of the day, they currently sit here at, what is it? 6-2. They are the 3 seed currently in the West and lead their the Pacific Division. The Clippers just lost to the Heat tonight.
Oh, wow.
And so like, you know, I think the culture part of this, and culture is this really weird thing to try to talk about, you know, because right now it might feel like they have the best culture in the sport, and maybe, you know, they'll lose three out of five and we'll be like, oh, where'd the culture go, what happened to it, you know, and it's this very in the moment thing. But what I will say, Raj, is the expectation is there, and that's where culture starts. If there is no expectation there and follow through on expectation on, you know, what every player who plays is, you know, it what is demanded of those players when they walk out onto the court. Like one thing that I really liked watching, people kind of laughed at it in the moment, but when JJ Redick like rushed onto the court and asked Jackson Hayes, "What the fuck are you doing?" In last night's game, and then immediately benched him too. Like that was the part of it. That was that second step there where he takes Hayes out of the game completely. And like, that was a part of it that Darvin was missing, where like there was no accountability. There was no follow through when he would get frustrated with the team. It was just like, ah, man, that sucks. Well, keep on playing, Torian, or keep on playing, Cam. And it was just like, And to me, you know, at least from what we've been able to glean, and you could maybe speak more to this, you know, being in the building more often, but the culture seems to be a real priority that they're trying to build here. And it's been fun to watch some of that take hold.
I love the we've gotten to the portion of the show where the chat is guessing my age, and it's ranged from 18 to 53 somehow. So
53?
Somewhere in the middle,
they had to be guessing my.
It's somewhere in the middle of those numbers. No, it's definitely like you mentioned, you know, JJ coming in running on the court, kind of being upset at Jackson. But you can't do that without having the relationship with the player, right? There's got to be an understanding where both of them kind of know, can kind of have that relationship. I think JJ's like, obviously, coaching isn't just playing guys through things. Like, it's also playing them in the right positions. There was, you know, a lot of wonder of, like, why is he giving Bronny so many minutes? And you're kind of seeing kind of the, you know, the reasoning behind that. He's got him ready. And, you know, coaches talk about this all the time of keeping every player ready to go. Like, that's a real challenge in a season. And I think JJ just deserves a lot of credit for being able to throw in a guy like Nick Smith Jr. in this game. And he's ready. Like, he doesn't look phased, doesn't look shocked. He threw Chris Mannion in a game recently, and he came in and, you know, looked ready to play. That's just a level. I think that's what good coaching is, when you can have every player on your bench know their role and they step in and they're ready to go for it. Now, that helps when you're winning. It's a lot easier to do that. But no, the vibes are good, or immaculate, as the kids say. It just, it feels like you know, everyone's really kind of rowing the same direction. And his team is obviously feeling good, and you kind of see that on the bench. You see that, you know, in post games when they're interrupting each other, you know, before they speak. JJ's doing his presser, and Luka's on the side kind of heckling during it. That's just, that stuff you do when a team's kind of really connected and the vibes are well. So
I don't think there was very many Darvin Ham pressers that guys were showing up for.
Well, I mean, when you're not playing well, pressers aren't too happy.
Dude, they made a Western Conference Finals in this first season there, and I don't think there were very many guys who were like showing up and like, you know, doing that. They were really excited when Darvin won his first game. I'll give them that.
Yes.
But yeah, certainly by the end of his tenure, I don't think the guys wanted to spend any more time around Darvin than they needed to. And look, like, the fact that last season ends the way that it does, right? They lose in the first round, in, I would call, embarrassing fashion. You would say that was a close five game gentleman sweep, however we want to define it.
It was, man.
But the fact that they would go through that experience, and JJ would have the ear of his team the way that he appears to so far this season, I do think is worth noting. And again, it's easy to identify these things when they currently sit 6-2 and have had the success that they've had this season. But I think a lot of that success is predicated on that culture that JJ is at least building within this roster. Now, hopefully it extends to the rest of the organization, and we see further buy-in from the upper levels of the organization as the season goes along. But as it stands right now, you know, this was a culture win. You do not win like the Phoenix Suns, when they had Kevin Durant and Bradley Beal and Devin Booker, they did not win this kind of a game. Those teams that frustrated, the Dwight Mayer Lakers teams, right? That this is going to be fun group. Those teams did not win this kind of game. The Lakers, when they had LeBron and Russ and AD, those squads would not win this kind of game. They were down the same level of talent, you know, that some of those teams faced in some of those games, and those teams lost by 40, even to a team like this Portland Trailblazers team. This was a win that you know, I think, you know, that JJ Redick will enjoy his glass of wine tonight.
100%. I remember in not comparing the teams at all, but I remember in 2020, the Lakers had a game on the road in Chicago, and I think they were down like 15 or something, or 18. It was like Kuz's first game back, and the bench just went nuts and won the game in the fourth. AD had a really bad game. I mean, I don't remember if LeBron played, but that was one of the games I stamped early. It was like the sixth or seventh. I don't remember what game it was. It's like, man, this, like, oh, like, this team has something. Like, they believe, they're not just good. Like, you know, a team's good, but you know, when they know they're good, like, that's when you hit a different level. Yeah. And this is that type of game to me where, like, the whole team knows, like, yeah, we're shorthanded. Like, we could have laid down tonight, but no, like, I'm Rui Hachimura, I'm Marcus Smart, you know, I'm DeAndre Ayton. Like, we're talented too. And so we can come in and lead a team in a, you know, a tough place to play like Portland, with a bunch of young guys that are fiery. Shaedon Sharpe, Tomari Kamara, who's hitting like three threes in the first quarter. Jrue Holiday came in, tried to take the game over. Again, that's a good team. Danny Advia, I think, dropped 30 tonight. Ooh, they had a stat on the Spectrum broadcast that he averages more points against the Lakers than anyone else. Just random stat. 29 again tonight, or 30, whatever he had. But no, this is a big time win, and they play San Antonio in a few days. There's going to be out Dylan Harper. And so, you know, and Wemby's playing like a guy who's not from this planet. So it's going to be a tough game, but a chance again to kind of continue on the road and see if you can move to 7-2 before this big East Coast road trip.
Here's the this is the picture that I was kind of talking about earlier. This is Nick Smith Jr. He's making his way back to the bench. Here's Austin waiting for him. That is so dope.
Oh, that's sick. Yeah.
That is such a great picture. And the, by the way, like, this is Austin Reaves. He's about to get paid, right? Like, capital P, capital A, capital I, capital
averaging D, 35 a night.
Paid. Like, yeah, like
superstar right now. Yeah.
He got votes for player of the week this last week.
Yeah.
And this is about as pumped as I have seen Austin all season. And it's for this dude, Nick Smith Jr., who's on a two-way contract, who was looking at the end of his career, you know, in far too clear a picture that he would have liked. And he's coming back to the bench. He has somebody like that waiting for him. And by the way, behind Austin here was actually Luka. Like, that whole bench was going nuts, absolutely apeshit for the stuff that Nick Smith Jr. was doing to the Portland Trailblazers. So, yeah, those are those kind of moments that you kind of look back on, you know, as you know, like you're saying, those moments that you kind of like, you know, you write down on a piece of paper and you come back and you're like, this is the, you know, this is when they were building something, and this was the Nick Smith Jr. game. We'll see if we can maybe get a few more Nick Smith Jr. games over the course of the season. Raj, anything else before we get you out of here?
No, that was a fun one. That was exciting. Again, I think this team is really good. I thought they'd be able to survive without LeBron. 6-2 without LeBron. I thought I'd be able to score, and they've had 140 last night against Miami. Whatever they got to tonight against Portland, the offense is clicking. The defense
123.
Seems like 123. Yeah, like, again, that's without both your cars. Don't have two
all
engines.
All three of them.
Yeah, well, cars don't have three engines either, but whatever, like, all three of your, the car and the wheels are off, or however you want to, you know, put that.
Well, it's like a boat, right? Let's not use a car analogy, but like a boat, like, imagine a boat, like, you have an engine, you have a rudder, and you have a sail, and the Lakers were missing all three of those things, and they somehow got that boat to move.
Right. And not only move, it somehow is like in a race with other boats, and it won the race.
It beat Portland's boat.
Which had everything, like all the goods on it. It had extra water on it, and, you know, we were still able to win. Yeah. It was great.
All right. That is going to do it here for this episode of the Lakers Lounge podcast. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. Thank you to Raj for hopping on. Raj, anything that you want to plug before we get you out of here?
I should have some videos up, and I'm going to go and rewatch this one and, you know, kind of break down Nick Smith and stuff like that. And I'll be in the building, should be in the building in a few days. It'll be the last game for a while. So yeah, it's been fun being there, at all these games and kind of getting to ask questions and kind of ask stuff that I really want to know about in terms of the film and things like that. And,
yeah, I want to give you credit for not laughing when Jackson Hayes said, like, catching, pocket passes and operating in the short role is the strongest part of his game. It was like, Jackson, you're 7 feet tall and you can jump 40 inches in the air. The best part of your game is dunking.
Yeah. Your lob threat is insane. Yeah.
I'm sorry, man. When I watch Jackson Hayes, or when I think of Jackson Hayes's game, I do not think of him operating in the short role. But no, it's been fun to watch you there, Raj, and the questions that you're asking have been really enlightening as well. So congrats on that. Keep that up. And yeah, until the next time you guys hear from me, which will be tomorrow, maybe with Harrison. I'm not sure. Either with Harrison, or it'll be a mailbag episode. Either way, have a great rest of your night. Make somebody else's. And I will talk to you when I talk to you. Have a good one, everybody.